Hey there, radios. This is Dean, a.k.a. Rockdale Tiger, inviting you to listen to this week's episode of Mike TV as we recap episode 5 of the first season of HBO's Watchmen. Join Lisa and I this week as we discuss looking back through the life of Looking Glass, Squid Pro Quo with Senator Keene, and Adrian Veidt tries to get one over on the Game Warden. All this and more on this week's episode of Mike TV, and don't forget to catch new episodes of Watchmen every Sunday night at 9 o'clock on HBO.
Hey, how are you? This is Buffalo Bill, taking a break from feeding my moths and working on a new sewing project to thank all the wonderful people who donate and produce Radio Labyrinth, which is one of my favorite podcasts. Really, really whiles away the time while you're sewing. Thanks to Jason Chappell, Mike Hall, Sean Hall, Chad Shippard, Al McKeon, Daniel Pitts, Mike Spittler, Andrew Hopkins, Jonathan Wilson, Keith Tate, Brian Smith, Steve Knutson, Melissa Knowles, Leslie Norman, John Sutherland, who, by the way, has a wonderful framed picture drawn by Tim Andrews hanging up, pretty nice, Mike D, Eric Malmstrom, Matt Carter, and Beth Van Elswick. I gotta go, there's an FBI agent at my door. I think she wants to use my phone.
It's not just makeup effects, it's not just makeup, it's not just special effects, it's...
Monster makers, I mean,
yeah,
painters,
designers,
artists,
puppeteers, artists, yeah.
So you do a lot of different things.
Yeah.
Well, welcome to the show.
Yeah.
This is Radio Labyrinth episode 46. Joining us this week, two powerhouses in the world of special effects, makeup, puppetry.
Yeah, sure.
And all sorts of really awesome stuff that we're going to talk about tonight. Please welcome Shane Morton and Roy Woolley.
Yay. Hey, welcome you guys.
So we're all excited about this. I kind of get, you know, we've had actors and stuff on the show before, but you guys have created some really cool stuff that we really love. So it's kind of like, yeah, that's cool.
No, well, definitely geeking out over both of you guys, seriously.
And this is fresh off of like 15 hours worth of podcast with Rick Baker. So listening to him discuss how he got into everything. Are you guys fans of Rick Baker?
Oh, yeah. He's like the god of these. Of this stuff, you know. What did you just listen to the Joe Rogan one?
The Rogan one. He was on Gilbert Gottfried's Amazing Colossal Podcast.
Maren. Yeah, the Joe Rogan one was really good.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, we just finished that one.
Did they do DMT while they were there?
I don't listen to that stuff. I didn't know the DMT joke, but they were from, joking about it. Yeah. So.
Yeah, if you start getting into Rogan, that's the slog you go through, and then his comedian friends are on when there's no guests and they're just stoned the whole time. It's fun.
And they have to, you know, the prerequisite is doing ayahuasca to get in there to talk to him or whatever.
Ayahuasca. They did that on the premiere of Ray Donovan.
Yeah.
Or the what is
ayahuasca?
Ayahuasca is
It's like the stuff that triggers DMT to release in your brain. It's like shamans do it.
Yeah.
Oh,
people
okay.
go to Peru, you know, rich people who want to find themselves go to Peru. And
is this to like get your chakras?
No, you trip your face off for like
Yeah, you have to have like a spirit guide to take you through the underworld and stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, it's way too heady for me.
I've always wanted to try DMT, but I it seems like it's way too intense. So I don't know.
I can't, like, since the 90s, forget it, you know?
I feel like this is a 20-year-ago thing to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. A lot of people don't need that. I mean, you guys come up with creative, you know, innovative, artistic stuff, and it's not doesn't come from a drug place, right?
Yeah. Do you get that? A lot of people say, man, you must have been high when you did that.
Or you're just mentally deranged.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you know, I would hate to have your dreams, you know, and it doesn't work that way, because most of the time whenever you find something in that state of, you know, either being, you know, drunk or high or whatever, you forget about it whenever you sober up.
Yeah. So, that was a great idea.
Yeah.
I can't remember.
It's easy for people to think that. I mean, I know, look, I was a face-off idiot. So I was sad when the show ended. I really was. I watched every season. Me and my husband, that was like our thing. And some of the things that you would come up with just on face-off, that vaudeville thing, that was one of my favorites. It was absolutely crazy. And, of course, I know everybody goes nuts about the Star Wars You're incredible. So, I mean, I guess that's why people think there's no way that a sane, sober person could think this up. And
well, the thing is that, I mean, I know whenever I was on Face Off, everybody was like, you know, how did you come up with this stuff so quick? And, I mean, I've been drawing and sketching since I was, you know, 8, 9 years old, and I'm sure Shane's the same way. And you always store those things in your mind. And so I was just pulling up stuff that, you know, they said, we have this challenge here, and it's like, okay, what do I have that would fit that? And then it's like, ooh, I've always wanted to make this, and so you get to. It's, you know, a creative person, I think, is always being creative. I mean, they can look at, you know, a pattern on the wall and see a creature in it.
Now, your fabrication, that was what was always so leaps and bounds above a lot of the other people that were there. Like, they just could not.
Honestly, a lot of that was just dumb luck, because I know that was the second suit that I'd ever made, because I just started fabricating with a foam like that. And it's like, but me and Rod had the same idea, had the same concept. And it's like, he wanted to do the sculpture. It's like, okay, then I'll make this suit. And so it was just dumb luck that it worked out the way it did.
Well, it was pretty amazing.
When you guys were little kids, did you see stuff on TV and draw it, or did you say, did a monster come to your head? Because when I was in elementary school, I was constantly getting in trouble, and also in junior high, for drawing, just drawing, not paying attention. In third grade, you know, we had those big sheets of butcher paper, and I'd just draw Star Wars battles and Cylons. Yeah. They were shitty, but, I'd draw Chewbacca and all that crap, and then all these different monsters and things. And that's how I spent my Saturdays at my dad's house, you know, just drawing and drawing and monsters. And to take that, what you have as kids, and to make it into what you do now is pretty remarkable.
Yeah, I mean, I say this all the time, like, 5-year-old Shane would be very proud of 50-year-old Shane.
Yeah. Yeah.
Still basically doing the same stuff, you know. Yeah. I'm lucky enough that I was, like, raised by the Addams family, so there was always, like,
that's cool.
Yeah, like, I knew who Ray Harryhausen was when I was 4, you know. We had, like,
I don't know who he is now.
Yeah, you do. The guy that Sinbad movies.
Oh,
like,
yeah,
you
yeah,
love
yeah.
him, actually. You
might so know. It was the King Kong 1933 that got you into it.
Yeah, that was the first thing I saw on my 3rd birthday, and ever since then, I've just been obsessed with this stuff. Like, I was stop motion animating my own little movies when I was, like, you know, 9, 10 years old.
Really? So you had a little, 16?
Little Super 8 camera.
Oh, Super 8, yeah.
The little photo clicker on it, you know?
Yeah. Jeff had one of those in his house. We made some goofy Star Wars movies, didn't we?
Yeah, we used to play around with those.
No sound?
Yeah, no sound. I wasn't allowed to see, like, for instance, I wasn't allowed to see Alien, because it was, like, just too much bad language and just too adult, you know?
Right.
And so, I made my own stop-motion version of it. I had taken, like, clay and put it over some G.I. Joes and built up what I thought the alien looked like.
Oh, that's awesome.
The thing was a secret, you remember?
Yeah.
Like, nobody knew what the alien looked like, but we were reading Famous Monsters going, oh, what's it going to be? And, yeah, the version I did was a lot nastier. It was like the heads getting knocked off and, like, blood all over the walls of the room, you know.
You still have that stuff?
Like, no, but I would probably murder somebody to have access to all of my Super 8 stuff. Like, I won a national award for this one I made about my rat turning into a superhero, and I would kill to get a hold of this thing, but I don't know what happened to all this
stuff. Now, speaking of apes, Roy, you got turned on by Conquest of the Planet of the Apes.
That was the first movie I ever saw that had special effects in it, you know, the original ape movies.
Is that the one with Ricardo Montalban?
Yes.
And
yes.
Caesar?
Yes.
Apes movies are my Star Wars. And
mine
Star
too,
Trek.
Really. I mean,
I
Star
them.
Wars is great, but it's, you know, it's gone so far off the rails now, it's not even good movies anymore, in my opinion.
I even like the Planet of the Apes TV series.
Same here.
Yeah.
Same here. The one that had the blonde-haired guy, black-headed guy. And
The handsome, you always had to have the brunette, handsome brunette guy and the handsome blonde guy.
Yeah, the
like Dukes
the
of Hazzard
Ape Duke
formula.
Boys, exactly.
Yeah.
The Apes of Hazzard.
Apes of Hazzard, yeah.
I even like the new ones. Now, but that's all CGI, right? They don't do anything.
The last three that has it. But then the one that they did, that Tim Burton did, that was all practical makeups.
It was.
Those are all practicals. Yeah, that was just wonderful makeups done by Rick Baker.
Yeah.
And, I mean, they actually made them look more like apes than the CGI ones do.
Yeah.
You know, it's just incredible watching that one.
The way that the chimpanzees look was, because the chimpanzees, they're cute. Zira, Dr. Zira, and Cornelius, these apes look mean.
Yeah.
Or these chimps. Chimps, yeah.
Yeah, they are mean. They like rip your genitals off. You know?
Yeah, that thing will rip your face
off,
Jamie.
Which they actually will do now. You know, if you have them as a pet and they turn on you, they will rip your face off.
Yeah. When they get bigger, yeah, there was that couple that had a gorilla or a pet chimpanzee. I don't know where they were.
Don't watch that.
No,
interview with her. Yeah. It's like her face is made of bubble gum now.
They go for your balls first if you have them. Then they throw them away from your body.
Yeah.
Those are gone.
Catch.
Go get them.
Fetch.
Well, Roy, how did you get started after you saw? I mean, you were inspired, but.
Well, I've always loved, the old Dracula, Frankenstein, Planet of the Apes. Whenever I was 16, 17, I saw American Werewolf in London.
Mm-hmm.
And the transformation scene in that is like, okay, somebody got paid to do this. This is the job that I want.
Mm-hmm.
This was back in the early 80s, and there still was, you had Richard Corson stage makeup. And a couple of other books. That was it. There were no videos. There was no instructions, And so I just started Fangoria Magazine would just dig through it and just magnify every picture to see what these guys had on their shelves and everything and just started finding stuff and just started just doing it.
Yeah. Yep. Same here. It was like that Dick Smith monster makeup book. When we teach, we still break that thing out.
Yeah.
Grand Illusions from Tom Savini.
Yeah,
Do you guys watch like a lot of these YouTube creators now? I mean, there's a lot of these kids that are just doing makeup on YouTube that are incredible.
Yeah. Not so much.
Some of them are horrible.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, they do stupid stuff like, take an input and they cut a beer can or a bottle and then put it to their forehead and put wax around it. And it's like, okay, first of all, that never happens in real life.
Right.
And second of all, you're putting a pair of scissors next to your eyeball.
Yeah.
That if you fall, hey, your eyeball's gone.
Right.
That'd be a real good makeup effect.
I remember that always was their, the judging, on Face Off, that was always the thing is if it was practical, if it made sense or whatever. And I'm not mean, but my husband would always say whenever Glenn Hedrick, whenever he would go off on somebody that we liked, he would be like, Fat Danzig.
What?
Oh, man. Yeah, that guy.
I'm like, oh, I mean, no, I actually would say you're right. He's a bastard. But anyway.
Does it make lives easier living in Atlanta now where all the movies are being made? Do you get a lot of work that way or do you have to go make your own?
Well, I would say that Roy and I have both been doing this long before it was Yollywood.
Like, you've been here.
Way back in Cheerleader Autopsy.
Yeah, Cheerleader Autopsy. And
we worked on Rob Zombie's Halloween 2. We did that together. We were always doing stuff even before the industry came here. It means more work,
Right.
It's easier now, but you still have to go out and get it. It doesn't just come to you.
Right.
That's part of being, part of the makeup and, anything that's like behind the scenes, they don't come to you. You have to go to them. You have to, pound the pavement daily.
Yeah.
Now you live in Tucker, right?
Yeah.
What part of Tucker? It's quite a big city.
Well, it is a big city.
Right.
I mean, I'm right there close to the Walmart Supercenter.
Yeah, I live off of Old Norcross.
Okay. Well, I'm in the Ivanhoe.
Okay.
Right there behind the golf course.
Oh, yeah. Nice. Nice. I bet it's nice and quiet over there, except for the fireworks that go off every night.
Yeah.
We have a fireworks problem in Tucker. I called the police once. It was 11 o'clock at night. And I said, can you tell me when the cutoff is for fireworks?
Oh, man.
I said, never mind.
Yeah.
What's worse, wow. It's even like the bass music that you hear like 2 o'clock in the morning from some of the neighbors.
Oh, yeah.
And it comes through, and they're like two streets over, and you're still hearing it in your house with the air conditioner on.
Ouch. We moved there 3 years ago. I really like it, though. It's quiet. We have a lot of land. I mean, a big yard that, I don't like in the summer, but I still like it.
Same here.
But it is a cool little town. I like it. So.
Yeah, Tucker's cool. Some friends of ours that run the Tucker School of Art, and it's like a weird little art community.
Where?
Like
Tucker School of Art.
Yeah, it's mostly for kids and stuff. But
yeah.
It's funny that downtown Tucker has this weird little art community.
That's cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Me either. Yeah.
I know they have a Local 7.
And bars and stuff.
Yeah, Local 7, Freakin' Inkin', which is a pretty tasty place.
There's some great places there. There used to be some really great dives there, but they're all either gone or burn up. So.
Oh, you mean like bars?
Yeah.
There's some of those on Lawrenceville Highway there, those honky-tonk
joints.
Yeah,
like Billy Bob's Secrets House of Secrets or whatever it is. you know, this burger tastes like Marlboro Reds.
Yeah, you know? That's all right.
Matthews can go there and get stuffed.
Yeah.
This isn't Tucker Talk, though, so I'm sorry. Yeah.
Okay. Can you guys talk about...
Matthews is pretty legendary, actually. Yeah.
Can you guys talk about what you're working on right now? I know, Roy, you just got done working the Netherworld.
Yeah, just finished our 23rd year at Netherworld, which is my 22nd. Had a great season this year. It was a lot of fun. And presently, I'm helping out on Freaky Friday the 13th. Which is the Vince Vaughn movie that's in town.
Freaky Friday the 13th. So it's is it a mashup of Freaky Friday and Friday the 13th?
That's the concept that they have online. Uh-huh. It's basically that premise. It's, you know, serial killer and a person, their bodies exchange.
Oh, God.
That sounds great.
So you have somebody that wakes up in the body of a serial killer and a serial killer that wakes up in a teenage body.
Oh, that's going to be
And
good.
Hilarity ensues.
Yeah, no doubt. What are you working on right now?
Well, we just wrapped this crazy thing called Masters of Doom up in New York. It's definitely the biggest thing I've ever worked on. It was like those kids that made Doom, you know, the computer game that kind of changed everything. These kids like became like superstar multimillionaires at 22, 23 years old, and it's like their story. Mm-hmm. But the if you read the book Masters of Doom, it's very like, and then they did this and they did this. So how did they make it visually stunning? They inject a lot of sex and violence and, you know,
that usually
cool
makes
stuff,
things better,
you know. So I don't know how much sex it was, but like there's definitely, you know, monsters and, you know, guys in suits of armor made mm-hmm. out of skulls and all this neat stuff.
Yeah,
you know, these like sort of them in their minds, you know, playing Dungeons and Dragons, thinking about what this thing's gonna be. So they had us do all that stuff.
Jeff, what happened to us? We played D&D. We did all this. We were just too lazy to do anything.
Yeah, we're just schlubs.
Yeah.
Try and find the easy way out.
I guess you got to find the drive, though. You have to find, you know, the passion that you had immediately. You knew this is it. Or at least you had an idea that this is it. Now, I used to pretend I was Casey Kasem and do fake top 10 shows with my, so I guess I'm doing the same thing.
No, you're doing it.
Yeah.
Right? You've
I
got
hear that
passion.
In the voice. Yeah. I hear that Casey Kasem in there.
That's right.
Yeah.
Goddamn death dedication.
And you guys were talking about a little in the parking lot. You haven't heard if Your Pretty Face Is Going to Hell is getting picked up or not because of the whole regime change over there at
AT&T
Network, Adult Swim.
Yeah, I just got done shooting a thing. Like, everybody that works on Pretty Face together, like, we love working with each other. And we just did an anthology film with Eduardo Sanchez, the guy that did Blair Witch. And our segment was called Good Head. And this is really screwed up, and I'm going to get in so much trouble for it. But, like, Henry plays, like, this bizarro version of me that is trapping film celebrities' souls in their head casts. And he's got this crush on this guy and puts his head, and he's making it, you know, fillet him and do all this stuff. I don't know if I can. We're talking about, because everybody there was from Pretty Face. They'd all come down from New York and L.A. to shoot this little anthology segment. And, you know, everybody's like, well, when are we getting started on Pretty Face? And Matt's like, I don't know if we are. And Henry's like, oh, yes, we are. And this is happening. And this, you know, so, but nobody really knows. We just know we want it to happen.
They do that with a lot of shows on there. You don't know when they're coming back, and then they just announce it.
Yeah.
Especially the ones that you really like a lot.
Yeah. It's like whenever we're like, hey, what's happening? They're like, hey, shut up. It took 5 years for the Venture Brothers. And I'm like, yeah, but we're ready to jump right
now. Yeah, but they draw every cell by hand.
Yeah.
It's true. That's what they do, right? That's why it takes so long.
Yeah, I think they're still doing cell animation. On
I love that show.
Yeah, they are, yeah.
I think it's one of the most.
It's kind of the end of season 3 of Rick and Morty, where, you know, they have the, you know, the little character going, it's like, yeah, we'll be back in, like, you know, 2.5 years for the next episode.
Rick and Morty's done that way too still?
Yeah.
You got to appreciate that. I mean, South Park, they can turn out in 24 hours.
Well, I think it's the animation style, too. Like, Rick and Morty, even, I mean, this season, the last episode, whenever Rick was on the toilet, I mean, it's just amazing.
I haven't watched them yet. I'm holding them all to binge watch them.
Yeah. I mean, the way I look at it, too, is, like, I mean, I don't know how much trouble I'll get in for speaking frankly like this, but, like, there's ways, like, as cheap as we work on this stuff, there are actually ways to do it even cheaper. Mm-hmm. You know, like, we could set whole episodes in a hot air balloon, you know, and there's one location and it's a basket on a green screen. And like, we've actually got wacky ideas like this.
That's the Marvel movies, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Or any of the Star Wars prequels.
Yeah.
Everything's CGI.
Just everything.
But your brain knows. Go ahead. I'll let you finish.
No, but that's it. You know, like we love that show so much, and we just hope it does.
It's so good. And but you can tell, and I guess because we've been to watch them shoot scenes, and in April it was Adult Swim April, so we interviewed how many people from the show?
And we had Henry, Casper,
yeah,
Eddie Pepitone.
Yep.
Oh yeah,
we had everybody.
Shane the tortured, the other Shane from your
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun back in April to promote.
So it's passion for us. We love the show. So we're probably a little more obsessed with it than other people in a different way, because some people are obsessed with it.
That's the kind of people we need to be pushing the show. You know,
yeah. I hope Atlanta numbers are always up, because I get Eric to mention it on the radio show.
Oh yeah, I mean we're golden on that.
Yeah,
you know, like people love the show. It's just like I said, things are changing over. Like in Turner, you're seeing the signs coming down. I think people are kind of
what signs are coming down.
They took the Turner sign off the Turner building a couple weeks ago.
What they put up in its place?
I don't know.
AT&T, the Death AT&T, Star. Don't Warner they own it Brothers? Now? They're the ones that own Time Warner.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, I don't know. You know, I think that people are just afraid to like make a move. Maybe, I don't know.
Yeah.
You know,
might be.
But I'm ready to jump whenever. I mean, Roy and I were talking about it in the parking lot. If we could just make wacky Adult Swim stuff all the time.
Is that something you could do and put it out on your own platform?
Oh, no, just working for them is fun.
Right.
Know, because that's an idea, though.
Yeah.
I mean, social media and all these streaming channels are what's taking over. I mean, the main TV channels, they're going away before too long. Everything is going to, you know.
Well, that's the other thing. They're working with that streaming stuff down there, and they're looking for content. And, you know, I've pitched ideas about doing like a Professor Morte, my spook show character that I play, doing like a painting show, like Bob Ross type thing, you know, and because, you know, I can live make it happen. And they're like, oh, that's great. But then, you know, we haven't done it.
Right.
You know, because like I'm pretty sure everybody's pitching a lot of ideas down there, and who knows where it's going. But
there's so much content. Even FX now has a show that's sort of, I would say, Adult Swim inspired.
Like
cake.
Wacky stuff.
Yeah, animation.
Yeah, it's half animation, half live action.
Yeah, but it's all bizarre stuff. Not quite as bizarre as, I don't know, that Satan dog. What's that show called that you like?
Mr. Pickles.
Mr. Pickles.
Oh, yeah, Mr. Pickles. Whacked. That's a great show.
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah, I mean, like I said, I love working down there and doing all that stuff. There's a lot of creative freedom on that show, you know, for us and our team. So
here's a just random question. I'm sorry, we're all over the place. We don't really follow a linear pattern. But you watch films from the 70s and 80s when the special effects got really good. Or they were always good, but I mean, now everything's color, and you had American Werewolf in London, you had The Howling, stuff like that. It, amazing special effects. Do you think people now, kids now, watching those films, after watching, you know, nothing but CGI for the last 20 years, do you think they look at that and go, oh, I can't watch that? Like we would, maybe our generation would have went, oh, that's in black and white, I can't watch that.
You want to go first on this?
I'll be honest with you, I still watch black and white movies.
I'm just saying.
Right, but as far as like the people of this generation,
yeah,
I'm not going to use the M word. But honestly, they don't have the appreciation because they can't, as a whole, they can't put it in the perspective of what it was then, that it was, you know, top of the line then. That was the best that we could do at that point.
Right.
They judge everything by their video games and 3D animation and all
right
that stuff like
now.
That.
Like what's happening right now. That seems like how it is.
Yeah.
Like didn't you – I don't know if I can speak for you, but – when we were at that Monsterama show, I kind of felt like, and Roy and I were like two of the youngest guys there.
Really?
And I was like, where is the new guard that loves all the old stuff? Because that was something with our, like, I love silent films and all this old stuff. And, you know, that's the stuff that we studied, you know, to come into this was the beautiful early stuff. And I just don't know if there's like a new guard of younger people that are still being inspired by that stuff anymore.
The proof is that the new Charlie Angels reboot. Okay, so I know that I'm old because I remember the series. I remember the two decent movies.
Yeah.
And then, you know, a reboot of the movies of a successful TV show that is flopping. Okay, so it goes I did a post on this. I think technology has outran imagination.
Yeah,
which absolutely. Is what's happened.
Yeah,
I mean because we've become way too smart and not creative about it.
That's fucking honest. I mean, yeah, you're right. And that Charlie's Angels thing that you brought up, that movie bombed, and then of course there's people on Twitter fighting about why it bombed. And you look in the thread, and the younger people are going, "Why did they even reboot it? It was a good movie from the 2000s." And I'm like, "No, no, no!
It was Farrah a good Fawcett, TV show from Cheryl, the 70s.
Yeah. Shelley Hack, Cheryl Ladd.
Well, do you think
Crispin Glover was great in that first?
Yes, he was.
Yeah, he was.
And like that was cool.
Do you think like maybe their classics are what you guys watched when you were kids? Now though, like their classics are the remake of The Thing with Kurt Russell, and I mean that's as old as they'll go.
Oh yeah,
but that's still pretty good. It's better than
see, I can't think of those, and I know on record, like if it's 25 years it's a classic or whatever, is that mm-hmm. the rule? I don't
I think
know
so.
But when I think of classic, I think of where it all starts, you yeah. know, and I think you've got to take it to the beginning, you know, with all the especially in our thing, like. And Rick Baker was saying this on that show that you probably listened to, he's like, those early Jack Pierce makeups will still never be topped. Mm-hmm. You know, people might get like better appliances and better like, you know, new formulas to work with because you're shooting in HD. Like, we don't even use the makeup that we used 10 years ago anymore.
Why? So, because of the
because of the new cameras and the new
it, what does it have to do? Reflect?
Yeah, I mean, the HD stuff, they actually put filters on now to blur people because the quality is so good is that you can see little skin pores and all like that you don't want to see.
Oh, I know. News reporters had to deal with that when it first started.
Yeah. That's why most of the makeup that we use these days is not even really like makeup. It's more like a dye.
Almost. Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
So it doesn't sit on the skin because you can see cream makeup just laid on somebody with HD. So the technology's changed. But the iconography of those early pieces just can't be touched, you know.
There's you
just
watch,
something beautiful about it.
Who is it? Lon Chaney Jr. played the Wolfman?
Yeah.
To watch that transformation.
And
it was just still, but it was still pretty cool when you're 10 years old and you're watching that on a Saturday morning and or you're staying up till midnight to watch the scary movie on the Superstation. I mean, when I was 10 years old, those movies scared the shit out of me. Stuff like... it wasn't Gremlins, it was Gargoyles.
We were just talking about that
out
movie.
In the West or something, and that movie
with
terrified
all the great,
me.
Bernie Casey as the King of the Gargoyles. And remember, like, all the designs look like old woodcuts.
Yeah.
It was like Stan Winston's first movie, that one. The work is actually really cool in it. You know, they've all got, like, dog faces with beaks and bat wings.
Yeah,
it
was scared.
Like, old medieval woodcuts.
I thought about that movie for like 3 months after that. Like, look, I wouldn't go out at night or looking around. I was just scared.
Yeah, what was that? That's what I liked. What was the first movie that either one of you could say that really scared you? That really actually made you, you know, like, wow?
Mine was, they used to show silent films on PBS when I was a kid, and I saw Nosferatu.
Oh, yeah.
And that one, still when people ask me, I think that's probably the scariest movie ever made, you know?
That was probably The Omen.
The Omen.
What is it that's scary about that to you? Because I'm scared of that movie still.
My dad was a preacher, so I was raised in a religious family, and just the thought of that just terrified me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it was, you know...
That I
devil.
To ask you about
that. The music's really good in that one. Yeah. The music works really good.
Yeah, it really
to
does.
Make dread.
Oh, that operatic.
Yeah.
How did you, same, I grew up a very religious family. My dad's a coal miner also. So it was, I got actually grounded because I lied and said that I was going to see the Rescue Rangers, and I actually went to go see The Exorcist Part 3. So he found out I was
Rescue
grounded
Rangers
for like 3 weeks.
Rescue Rangers probably scarier.
Yeah, you know, it was a much better film. Yeah. No. Exorcist 3 is pretty good, I think. It still holds up. But
besides Fabio and the angel stuff, if they left all that stuff out, Exorcist 3 is a pretty solid.
It's better than Exorcist 2, the Heretic.
Oh,
or the Heretic, however you say it.
Yeah, ouch.
Oh, the old lady climbing on the ceiling messed me up.
Yeah, the thing with the scissors. Yeah. Like,
and that's what I wanted to tell him.
Editing.
I've been punished enough. I'm going to have fucking nightmares about this movie for I can't even tell you how long.
Yeah.
But I wanted to see, how did you skirt around that, you know? Did you just kind of sneak and watch stuff?
I hit a lot of stuff. I did, and you know, you have to, you know, you can't. I loved the band Kiss growing up, and you know, my dad was one of those, like, you know, that's in Satan's service and everything. Yeah. So I had albums, and I would hide them like under the rug in the living room. I would lift it up and stick them under there, you know, in under the corner and things like that, and just hide my music and my posters and all my stuff like
I
that.
I had to do the same thing. My dad, like, freaked out when he saw the Aussie Diary of a Madman.
Really?
Yeah, because it was really weird. Like, my dad went through this weird thing. We were really poor, right? And he had some kind of, like, mental breakdown and got saved. You remember when mm-hmm. the whole thing happened in the 80s?
Yeah. Yeah.
Bob Dylan did it, right? Yeah. Everybody was getting saved. So he did this.
It's like Kanye now, right?
Yeah, like, it's the same stuff happening now.
It is.
It's cycling around.
You got to serve someone.
Yeah, it all comes back. But he went from being this, like, totally, like, you know, crazed occultist that, like, had all this crazy art in the house to being like, oh, no, you kids are reading Bible stuff and you're not allowed to go see, you know, he saw the Diary of a Madman cover with the upside down cross on it. And it was, you know, it was like you said, it was always a battle. Like, I'd come home and I remember my Alien graphic novel. He had gone through and with a Sharpie and destroyed it by putting a Sharpie mark over all the obscenities in it, you know. And I was just like, censorship. You know, I've read the book already, you know, and
I know what the words are. I know. I can remember them.
My mom was a single mother and we didn't have a lot of money. She worked two jobs. So, and she didn't really pay that much attention to what I had. So I had Fangoria, I had heavy metal, you know, because no one carded you when you bought heavy metal, even though it was on that top shelf. And then we got a little older and Jeff and I would just shoplift all of our porn. We called it horking.
Just slip it in the heavy metal.
Yep. You know, Jeff could get like three of them in his sweatpants. and then I started writing these stories about a vampire, and I showed them to my mother, and she took them and threw them away and said, these are evil, my friend killed herself, blah, blah, blah. She had no idea what she was talking about. But I mean, that was the one time I said, hey, Mom, I want you to read these things I wrote.
Creative writing class.
I mean, you're the one who got me the kettle in 1980 or 81 that you would put the goop in and then you made bugs.
Oh, yeah, creepy crawlers.
Creepy crawlers. Did you have that?
That was a lot of fun. Yeah. Shrinky Dinks, the whole.
I still have that. Sorry.
Yeah. Being a kid in the 70s, late 70s for us was great. Like all the monster toys that were coming out, like it really fueled you up.
That weird head that you could put the beard on, and Jeff had that. What was that guy's name?
Oh, that guy across the street had it. It was
Dr. Hugo.
Yeah, that Dr. Was? Hugo. Yeah, yeah. Pee Wee Herman had it in the
I've still original Pee Wee Herman brothers. Special.
Wow. That's got to be worth a lot.
Nah.
No?
Nah. Not as much as like Japanese toys from that time, like Shogun Warriors and stuff.
Oh,
like
yeah.
That, you know?
My brother sold a broken Optimus Prime for like $50 to $60, and people buy those G.I. Joe dolls that are missing arms, and they just want the pieces.
Yeah,
and He-Man and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I was a toy dealer for so long, and
his house is like a museum of toys. I mean, it's incredible.
Lucky.
It really is. Yeah, he has just all kind of cool stuff in his house.
A lot of stuff.
You ever been to Littles? In Cabbage Town, that little store burger joint.
Mm-mm.
It's Cabbage Town, so it's, you know, it's a burger joint that looks like Cabbage Town on the inside. But I'm gonna bring it up because they have this antique cabinet. It's filled with toys, and I always would just go over there and stare at it. And go, I want that.
Yeah, I had that.
Do you still flip toys? My husband does that. Like, he'll buy a toy and he'll say, "I don't want to hear it," because in about 8 months, this thing is gonna be whatever, and then he'll flip it on eBay, and he's always right.
New toys?
Yeah, he buys new ones.
No, I don't deal anymore. I quit that stuff. Like a long time ago, but I still like every night. Like when we were up in New York, I treat myself to one thing from Toy Tokyo, and I got this like flocked vinyl smog monster thing. You know, I've really chilled out. You know, it was starting to look unhealthy. You know, when you have an obsession and it starts to be like, oh, my whole living room has 10-foot glass shelves top to bottom. It's gotten out of hand.
Wow. I mean, his whole office is like that. And actually, he's been collecting Transformers since he was a child. He had original boxes, all that stuff. And then our dog lost his mind after our other dog died. And we came home from work one day and he had torn the closet doors down, tore all the boxes out that they came in, shredded them. They were in a big pile on the floor, and then he pissed all over them.
Whoa.
That's a smart, vindictive dog.
Hell yeah.
That's like what kind of dog is that?
He was a Barbie fan.
He was a pit bull. We ended up having to put him on Prozac after that.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
He just lost his mind. Our other dog died, and he was
just like so
he was in grief. It was grief.
Yeah, like that's some heavy grief where you take the idols of your master and
chew them up,
pee all over them. Like, wow.
I saw the old Godzilla toy that Fire I had when fist. I was a kid. No, the tongue, the rubber.
The fist shoots.
Yeah.
Yeah, the fist came off and the tongue would come out. Yeah, it was like 20 inches tall or something.
Yeah, I saw it at this place in Little Five Points the other day, and I was like, I'm going to buy this.
I know just what you're talking about. It was at Transporter.
Yeah.
Because I was there the other day, and Chris Hsu had it, and I was looking at it. I was like, you know, Chris, I really need to make a mold of the hand. Because everybody's got one, but they're all missing their
hand.
Exactly.
Missing the hand.
Well, but I thought about it. I want to buy this, but then I know what'll happen to it. My wife will say, oh, that needs to go down in the basement with your bobbleheads and your other things.
Yeah, all Tim's stuff is down in the basement.
But you're like, but no, I'm sleeping with it now.
But I have a kind of brain, and maybe you're like this because you described your house. I don't like to look at a blank wall. I want to see shit everywhere.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I mean, like, my favorite city is Tokyo. Like, I have to be totally inundated with information all the time. Not in the way that kids these days do it with the cell phones mm-hmm. and stuff and the thing. Like, I need to be, like, surrounded by art and stuff. You
yeah.
know? Like,
yeah.
Some people might not say it's art.
Yeah, it is.
But, you know, I've got, like, framed, signed Bernie Wrightsons and stuff like that. And that's undeniably the work of a master, you know. And some people, they just don't get it. But some people can see it and go, oh, wow, that's a, you know, Ray Harryhausen sculpted that. They get it, you know.
I have a signed Squidbillies season 5 poster, 6 poster, signed by everybody, and really cool artwork. You know, not, it doesn't, whatever. That's in the basement with my signed season 1 Sopranos poster.
So is this basement like the man cave or is it just storage?
No,
it's like not a hangout.
Place where the cat shits and.
Oh, man.
Dog kennel, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, we do have dog kennels down there, yeah, but we don't put our dogs in there. We board dogs from time to time.
Oh.
Yeah, one of these days I'm going to, you know, maybe fix it up, but I don't know.
Because we just bought a new house in Decatur and my wife is like, we're doing all this work and she wants it to be nice and big and spacious. You know, like when she first moved in, I had to put a big window in the house because I live in darkness.
Yeah.
And surrounded by stuff.
Sounds
right?
like heaven.
Yeah, it was. And now there's these big windows and the cats
Light!
Love it, so it's okay.
No, that's true.
But now she's like, so she got this big house and there's a finished basement. You'd love it. It's all like Stone Mountain granite raw. So it looks like Frankenstein's lab down there. And she's like, okay, here's your... You know, here's your space.
Yeah,
the upstairs is gonna be like 2001: A Space Odyssey. You know, but like,
is your house like that, Roy? You have a lot of art and your tools of your trade now.
No, I take it and keep all mine in my studio, and I would rather take it and I like to be surrounded by stuff that I don't like too much because I don't want to be corrupted by other people's art and be, you know, influenced to do something that they do.
Right.
You know, because there's a very thin line between, you know, being inspired and copying.
Yeah, being a fan.
You know, yeah. So I try to keep all my stuff, you know, original stuff around so at least I'm getting my own vibes, you know, as opposed to other artists.
What's the thing that you've done in your career that you're most proud of?
Ooh. I don't know. I've... Okay, that's a very loaded question.
I know. I'm not good at asking.
So probably marrying my wife is probably the best thing I ever did.
That's a great answer.
You win.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
Same question.
Yeah. Oh,
marrying your wife.
Yeah.
Converting Henry Zebrowski to Satanism, that's probably going to be one of the big...
Do you that basement that you have? Use my answer.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I mean... Satanism. If you're talking about, like, artistically, you know...
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. Like, you always have to answer it hasn't happened yet because you're always looking for that next, like, super cool thing, you know?
How about, what's one thing that you didn't know you'd be able to, or you didn't think you'd be able to accomplish and did? Help me out if I'm asking.
Has there been something that you wanted to make that you just couldn't get the budget for?
Yeah, that's a better
that
question.
You're like, oh, man, if we just had a few more bucks, I could really knock this out of the park, but...
That's never stopped me from making it before. You know, like, you find a way to pull it off, you know.
You cut corners like, wherever you have to. Yeah. It's, you know, to
it's
do
just
like that.
And the thing, and Roy will probably tell you this, too, it's like, it's just because I'm not working on a show doesn't mean that I'm not making something. Like, right now I'm working on doing this, like, Bernie Wrightson Frankenstein tribute. I met this guy who's got like Marfan syndrome. He's like 7 foot tall and he looks kind of like Bernie Wrightson's Frankenstein. So I did a sculpt and we're going to do a thing. It's just a passion thing that I want to do for myself, you know? Mm-hmm. And so it's not like just because you're not on a show, you're not making stuff.
Radio Labyrinth is sponsored by Atlanta Pizza in Mural, 1565 Georgia 138 in beautiful Conyers, Georgia. Atlanta Pizza in Mural is a longtime local favorite, serving the best pizzas, gyros, Italian beef sandwiches, hot subs, spaghetti, lasagna, and Greek salads in a relaxed, casual setting since 1983. Find them on Facebook at facebook.com/ATL Pizza. Interact with other diners, check out the menu, and even start your order. Or AtlantaPizzaEuro.com. Hey guys, here's another one of Radio Labyrinth's awesome sponsors, Bailey Tree Care LLC in Gainesville, Georgia. You can contact Nick Bailey at 770-530-9421 or Jason Chappell at 404-234-2599. Bailey Tree Care. They are Northeast Georgia's premier choice for high-quality tree care services at affordable prices. Their tree care experts bring an excellent safety record and over 10 years of experience in the industry. Bailey Tree Care specializes in residential products and offers free estimates for all your tree service needs. Residential tree care, certified arborists and tree climber, tree trimming and pruning, tree removal, stump grinding and removal, shrub trimming, pruning, underbrush clearing, and mulch and firewood sales. Safety, professionalism, and affordability. Call them today to discuss your tree care need. That's Bailey Tree Care LLC.
Like, what was the last thing either one of you saw that you were so impressed with, and you were like, God bless it, I wished I was a part of that?
The best thing that I saw, which was way beyond anything I'll ever be able to capably do, was Kazu's makeup for Gary Oldman in that Winston Churchill movie.
Yeah.
That made me, I saw that and I started crying, and my wife was like, wait, what is going on here? And I was just like, wow, like this is the next thing, you know? Yeah. Like, it was, seemed like there was a huge leap.
Better than his Mason Verger makeup from Hannibal.
This thing was like so seamlessly, perfectly amazing. It's mm-hmm. just like you don't know what you're looking at almost, you know?
Who did his makeup?
This Kazu, he sculpts a lot of stuff for Rick Baker. He's like an amazing artist who's just like returned to start doing makeup stuff again. I don't know if you've seen the thing he did for Charlize Theron, but it's nuts too. Like, this guy is so subtle and perfectly good, which is not something I can do. Mm-hmm. I can do crazy over the top. You know, nobody's calling me for the realistic old age makeup. You know, they're like, okay, we want a vomit monster. Well, you know, here I come.
Have you ever seen Little Big Man?
Yeah. Yes.
Did Rick Baker do that?
No.
Dick Smith.
Yeah. Dick Smith, because that was pretty good given the time.
Oh. Well, and honestly, Dick created the whole process of breaking prosthetics down into smaller pieces mm-hmm. just for that.
Just for that
and,
film.
Yeah, and actually Rick learned from Dick.
Okay.
So so Dick is the master. Rick is the student slash apprentice or what, but now Rick's the master because we know we have Dick. So Yeah, he's the godfather.
I am a sole survivor of the Battle of Little Bighorn.
But he progressed. I will almost put Dick Smith's makeup on Bowie in The Hunger up against Kazu's thing. Like, there's all this crazy stuff he does. You know, when people get old, they get the
stubble
in it.
Amadeus makeup, too.
Oh, yeah.
They won, you know, the Oscar for it. I mean,
For Salieri?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dick Smith really... really, really did it. And he, have you ever seen the Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde with Jack Palance?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's another one. We kept watching it going, where are the seams on this makeup? Because Jack Palance is going crazy. He's like, yeah, I'm going to bang all the girls in this room tonight. And he's screaming, yelling, and dumping liquor on his face. And usually when that happens, you see the seams start breaking around the mouth and people start going, ah, ah. And it's like so masterfully done.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you ever get a chance to see The Exorcist on, like, big screen, and you see the priest at the back of his neck, I mean, he's, like, 7 years old, but he's really only in his 30s or 40s.
Yeah.
And the back of his neck, just the detail of the wrinkles in the back of the neck he looks like he's 70 years old.
Yeah. He didn't work for a while after that because everybody thought he was 70.
Yeah.
Max von Sydow didn't work for a while because they were like, ah, what happened to Max?
Not until Strange Brew.
But the thing that's great about Dick Smith's old age is he puts stubble in everything. Yeah. Everything. It's like,
you get that weird. I get that weird. Now I'm getting it up here. I'm underneath my eye. I'm like, where the fuck is this coming from?
Shave all the way up.
Yeah.
Huh? Shave up.
Yeah, you don't have to deal with that. You're a lady. You're about 20 years from getting that old lady mustache.
Everybody always says, oh, you're so lucky that you have thick hair. I'm like, yeah, it's everywhere. It's everywhere. So I'm almost a man.
Like Chicken Man. He's everywhere. He's everywhere. You see any movies that are coming out these days that use prosthetics and use masks and use...
Yeah, who's out there using practical effects and stuff still?
Instead of everything being CGI.
Is CGI coming for your jobs? Or are you...
You know, they've been saying it ever since CGI came out.
Right.
You know, and me personally, I don't hate CGI. I think that practical and CGI should be married together to enhance each other.
Yep.
Because there are some things you can't do practical. And one of my great examples is the Harry Potter movies, right. You know, where he has no nose. Well, he was shot the entire time. I mean, that's all, it's all practical makeup, except for the nose is green screened. So right. They go in and they just remove that. That's a perfect example of where both things go together.
Yeah.
You know, so they're not coming for our jobs, at least for another. Well, actually, with all the deep fake stuff coming out, they could be.
Right.
I think that everybody wants – I think there's actually a huge return to practical effects happening right now. We're in the new golden age of practical effects are happening, but it's happening because of the combination of VFX. Like, that's why the new – as much as maybe people don't like these new Star Wars movies, but that's practical effects that you're seeing. Those are all models.
The last three? Yeah, these three.
Yeah, even that scene where Luke is in the chamber and all the bricks blow out, that's all practical effects. All
unlike the prequels, which was almost entirely CGI.
And you're not watching those.
No, because your brain knows.
The new show, The Mandalorian.
Yeah.
Wow.
That one out there, that whole studio, the walls and all are all screens, plasma screens. There is no green screen in it. That's all plasma screens with motion sensors on it, so they change all the backgrounds.
Yeah, it's all rear projection. Old school rear projection done with modern technology.
Yeah.
Wow.
And, I mean, all this stuff, because a friend of mine was a stuntman on the show. He died like 21 times in one day. but he actually was telling me that the whole studio is built that way with plasma screens.
That is like, incredible.
Yeah, it is.
So
it,
did you watch that show?
I watched the first episode.
Yeah. Did you like it?
It's better than anything that they've done in the last 25, 30 years.
I got to agree with that.
Yeah.
I got to agree with that. I like the Western trope. Yeah. I like Nick Nolte.
See, I thought they did a good job with it in Solo and everybody knocked
Well, Solo,
that
yeah,
suit.
Okay, not even thinking of this. Solo like and Rogue One were okay, I thought were good.
Yeah.
I liked Rogue One.
Shout.
Yeah, I like that.
The problem with Rogue One, I didn't care about anybody in that movie.
True.
They all died, so...
Yeah, and I didn't care about
those two. That's the thing. That's like a filler episode on TV is all it is. It's just a filler.
I cared about the Death Star.
Yeah. My wife summed it up. She was like, you know, about halfway through, she goes, this is like being on tour with a band with people you don't like. You're stuck in this van. Because that's what the whole movie felt like. I'm stuck in a van. I don't want to play in this band anymore. You know, and it was taking me back to being stuck in a van with people I don't want to play in a band with. You know, so maybe it was a personal thing. I don't know.
That is the problem with like even prequels, though. It's like, you know, because you already know, if you pick up a story in the middle, you already know what's happened up to that point.
Yeah.
You don't have to have all the backstory and everything. You know, that's why I thought the whole prequel thing was just stupid.
Well, for this next Star Wars movie, you have to have read a book to know certain things in the plot. There is a book that came out, and it's set in between the last movie and this one, and you have to read the book to know.
Huh.
That'd be like having to read Splinter of the Mind's Eye in 1979 or 1980 to know what the next Star Wars movie is going to be.
Man, too bad they just didn't make that.
That was a great story, wasn't it?
Story, yeah.
Yep.
That was the one that we wanted.
Yeah, it sounds familiar.
Yeah, it was Darth Vader on the cover. You couldn't see his face. It was just an outline. You saw the lightsaber, and Leia's on her knees in front of him, not having sex with him. But,
yeah. You know.
But you know, I liked The Mandalorian. It gave me a little more hope.
Gave you hope.
Yeah, and there's shows that are coming on now that I'm like, whoa, I didn't expect this. You know, at first I rejected The Watchmen just on principle because I love the comic book and I'm okay with the movie. And I'm like, I can't watch it. But it's pretty good.
Yeah.
It's pretty damn good. Plus I like seeing Decatur in every scene when it's supposed to be Tulsa.
Yeah. Yeah. So, back to that question, is there anything you've seen that you or upcoming stuff that you wish you could have gotten on, or is anything exciting that you're seeing?
I'll be honest with you. it's been so long since something that's actually blew my mind. Because I mean, there's just been so much. I mean, we've taken such a huge leap in the effects world, you know, that it's like, you know, trying to invent how to make a cake, you know. And, you can make them bigger and prettier, but it's still the same basic ingredients.
Yeah.
You know, I really haven't seen any kind of leap like that. I mean, there's talented people out there. I mean, I know people that are in their, you know, early teens and 20s that are a far better sculptor and more artistic than I ever was at that age. So, really, I kind of hate them. You know,
really, like working with Kyle.
Kyle Gacklin is a great example. I mean, how old is Kyle? 22?
He's going to be 27.
27, but now I've known him for the last 10 years.
Yeah, even
and I mean, he's him and there's a couple other kids that are, they're like 16 now, but I've known them for several years. They are far more talented at that age than I ever was.
Yeah.
And probably am now, you know.
Really,
that's got to give you hope, though, because they're doing with their hands and their minds.
Yeah. Well, Kyle, we talk about Kyle a lot because he's one of us. He's from the old school. He's in a young man's body, but he listens to 80s metal and punk, and he, like, watches silent films with us and argues whether this is, like, he's, you know, he knows more about Batman, Golden Age, like all this wacky stuff that a 27-year-old shouldn't be.
Definitely so not, yeah.
He's kind of like a fish out of water probably in his peer group, but he can hang out with all these old guys and he gets the, you know, he gets
and
the...
And learn cool stuff, though, you know, because honestly, that's also the place you're going to learn it now. You're not going to learn everything. You're not going to learn stuff by watching YouTube. You know, because, I mean, that's people who are wanting locks and wanting to be locked as opposed to wanting to be good.
Right.
You know, that's the whole issue with that.
Yeah.
Oh, so I was going to ask, now, am I wrong about you were over the zombie apocalypse, or is that right?
Oh.
The haunted
yeah, house? Like we did the whole, we invented the zombie paintball and the meta haunt.
So I've done zombie apocalypse.
Is that the one in the old
hotel?
And
I've done Netherworld.
I did that one.
It was bad. It was pretty badass. I mean, the whole, I was about to have a heart attack running through there, and they were telling us that the police station had been attacked by zombies. They had little kid zombies coming up out of the ground. I was like, damn.
That was scary.
Yeah, we broke all the rules of haunted houses. Because that was a thing. Like, you know, like why would you want to put a haunted house in Atlanta? You know, Netherworld is the best that that format can be.
Mm-hmm.
So when these guys had approached me about doing this haunted house thing at this location, I mean, you saw the location, it was nuts. I walked out there and I was like, well, we're not going to do a haunted house. You know, we've got to do something totally different and approach it from a different angle, you know. So
this before The Walking Dead, too?
No, it's about the same time.
About the same time, okay.
Well, you know how that works. The antenna goes up.
Yeah.
It's the zeitgeist, you know. Like, the light bulb went off. I saw the logo and everything. And I saw the whole advertising campaign, everything.
Oh, when they pick you up in the bloody school bus.
Yep.
That's great. I mean, the drive out there. You got to drive past the prison. I mean, that...
It gets you set up for it.
Right? I mean... Well, Netherworld, too, though.
Netherworld's fantastic.
Yeah, it's unreal.
Yeah, I was there after the first year in Kennesaw. It was their first year at right off of Jimmy Carter. That was my first year. And, I mean, I've seen the place grow from, you know, being just a really small haunt to the mega monster that it is today. You know, I mean, now we have four escape rooms, a laser tag.
Wow.
You know, and, what, 70,000 square feet?
Where is it now? It used to be up in Gwinnett.
Stone Mountain.
Stone Mountain, okay, that's right. Yeah, that always scared me, but I always had fun. The one, I don't really do that because I'm too chicken. I really am. We had a little place in Elmira, New York, where we grew up, where I sort of grew up there. It was called Eldridge Park, and they had a very small spook house. It was on. You sat in a cart, and you just went through it, like on a little train track. And I went on it once, and I screamed bloody murder, and never went on it again. And then we went to Wildwood, New Jersey, and there was a place there called Dracula's Castle, and you could look up, and he'd come out and walk on the
parapet or whatever.
With you, something like that, and just look down. Ooh, scared the shit out of me, 8, 9 years old. Jeff and I went to some haunted houses in our town, but anyway, we comparing Netherworld, which is freaking awesome. We went down to Universal, and we paid and got the VIP.
Yeah,
to front of the line.
Have to.
That was just like going to a cafe. It was like going to Matthews, you know?
Yeah.
There's people there constantly going, keep it moving, keep it moving. How the hell are you going to be scared when people go, keep it moving, keep it moving?
Yeah, it's about numbers.
Yeah, it's not about being scared.
Yeah, it's tough. I still do theme park attractions. I did one at Six Flags in Atlanta here a couple years ago, and I had this lofty thing about having this thing where the environment's changed and the switchover happened, and we just couldn't get it pulled off because it's really about numbers. It's about, we have to do, it was like, I think they had to start 10 to 15 every 2.5 minutes.
Whoa.
So there's just a number that you have to hit. Yep. I mean, you know how it is. Like Ben has got that thing down to a science with like how to move people in and still make you feel like you're getting
No one's distracting you at Netherworld.
Yeah, they're not going, get out of the room. That's the number one rule at Haunted Houses. You don't say, get out of here.
That or boo.
Yeah.
You don't say boo.
Yeah.
And Netherworld is the only haunted house that really scared me.
Yeah.
They had that car that would come at you, which you were not expecting at a haunted house.
Yeah. Yeah.
The last scare, where I took this kid and we got all the way through it. You know, it was the end. The dude's chasing us out with the chainsaw or whatever. And we thought it was well over. We'd walked away. And then the topiary that was a potted plant jumped out. And it was, I'm pretty sure he shit himself. I'm quite sure he did. The car smelled on the way home. So
I had a dad punch me when we would do the haunted house. I was in high school, and this fraternity on campus, one of the guys worked at McDonald's, whatever, backstory. But he said, hey, do you want to work at the haunted house? So I said, yeah, and I dressed up as Freddy Krueger and I hid in hay, and when people would walk by, I'd jump and go, rrr, rrr, rrr. I scared this kid, and the dad punched me. And I was like, hey.
You're doing it right.
Yeah. And he apologized, but he really did. That was a reaction. Was like, oh.
Yeah.
I love Freddy Krueger. I was obsessed with Freddy Krueger in the 80s. I made a glove, and I took my mom's steak knives and took them apart, and found a way to get them into the glove, and I wore it to school on Halloween.
Oh, man.
And so this is a glove with knives
on
it.
Real knives.
Steak knives.
Yeah.
And I think I made it through 3 or 4 classes, and the principal said, hey, why don't you put that in your locker? Yeah. Okay.
All right.
You guys got any cons or anything you're got upcoming? Going to Dragon Con, either of you?
You guys did a big con, right?
Yeah.
You did.
Yeah, you just did a Monsterama.
Yeah.
That was a small show, but Dragon Con's gotten too big and crazy. Yeah. Like we were supposed to go up and do New York to pump Pretty Face, but things got, it just didn't happen in time. That was like supposed to happen like November 6th or something. But
I think Adult Swim is underrepresented here during Dragon Con.
Oh, they are.
Because usually the only person I see at the signing autographs is George Lowe.
Yeah, they don't do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's so many politics involved.
Really? I mean, because it's the hometown. I would love
to. They've had them there before.
Well, they did a panel. We did that one where I read the Larry Munton line.
Right, for Squidbillies.
Yeah. But you would think there'd be more.
Yeah. I think it's a political thing.
Yeah.
But from Dragon Con or from Adult Swim?
Probably, how politics are, it's both.
Yeah.
No, it's not. It's all the other people's fault.
Yeah.
The thing too is that, they just had this big, Adult Swim thing out in L.A., and it's like, why didn't they do it here in Atlanta?
Right.
Where the base is.
Right.
Well, yeah, because they don't, They do these things up in New York and L.A. It's also a show of, look what we are doing,
Yeah.
It's kind of preaching to the choir here, But, sure. We could do more everywhere, right? There's no such thing as too much ballyhoo or merchandising or anything.
I do think we have Dan Carroll on all the time from Dragon Con. Every year we talk to him about it. But I have to agree with you. It's way too crowded. I don't even go into the merchandise rooms anymore because you can't move in there.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying, it was better when it was smaller. Things get bigger. You have to find a different place where there's room, and I've suggested in the past, do it at the World Congress Center. I know it's not downtown, but you have room.
It's 5 blocks away.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm thinking about it. I haven't done Dragon Con in the last 3 years because it got to where it wasn't fun. It would take me an hour and a half to go get lunch just to get through the thing, and especially after Face Off. I mean, because I've been going since 94, so I've been to I hadn't missed a year. And it got to where I couldn't take it and walk 10 feet without somebody stopping me and me having like food in my hands for me and my wife, and it's like they want to stop and take a picture.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's just you
gotta
you
nudge Billy.
Like
you
that.
See him.
Yeah, yeah. Come on, man. It just got too crazy, and so I started taking off a couple years ago, and I haven't missed it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you couldn't do it at the World Congress Center that weekend because it's the Chick-fil-A game. There's so many things going on. The book festival.
Yeah. And I know that they always have. There's so many things going on in Atlanta, and I remember years ago, whenever it used to be in the summertime, they would have that and like one of the Baptist conventions or something like that in town at the same time. So it was weird. I was seeing all these freaks and everything, and then all these gospel singers and Christians running around together, and just
that's awesome.
Yeah, that was what, about 10 years ago, whenever you used to have them at the same time. It was just crazy.
That's amazing.
Primarily we are a pop culture show. We are all TV junkies, I would say. Is there any shows that you guys can't miss for either one of you, or you're too busy creating most of the time?
No, I mean, Glow knocked me out. Like, that one really got me. And the new She-Ra, I think, is incredible. We just finished that last night.
Is that a new animated?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's amazing.
What is that, on Netflix?
Yeah.
Mine and my wife is probably Bob's Burgers and Archer. Are our two favorites. I love those shows.
Yeah, Bob's has been, it just gets better every year.
Yeah, it does. It really does. They have a few episodes that aren't as good as other ones, but so far they have nailed it 90% of the time.
Going back to Adult Swim, Lauren Bouchard, just Home Movies. I loved Home Movies. That was like one of the best shows ever. So he's like, you see his humor. And it's really cool to see that so many people actually get it. It's not just Adult Swim people that get his humor. So,
yeah, my wife doesn't really watch any animated stuff, or 90% of the stuff I watch, she's not into. But I was watching Your Pretty Face. She actually sat down and watched that with me and laughed. She's this is gross. But she's laughing.
Yeah.
So I got her on that. But we started watching, she's been watching that show, The Crown. And I'm like, oh, I'm not watching that stupid British blah, blah, blah. And I noticed the difference. This season 3, it's in the 60s. There's scandal. She's older. And they're talking politics. And Churchill just died, played by John Lithgow. And I'm locking up. This is great. What of it? Because it's all politics and all that stuff that I know. And she goes, it's boring now. She goes, I liked it better when she was young and a princess and having fun and being a free spirit. No, she's talking to a husband who is
too
also,
much history.
Yeah. That guy from Game of Thrones and Rome. He was what's his name? I don't know anybody's name.
Yeah, I know. I know you're talking
about. Oh, and Patty Malcolmson showed up on The Watchmen.
Paula Malcolmson.
Paula, yeah. Patty, sorry.
What did you do, Ray?
Well, yeah. You think he's dead? We'll get to that later. We'll talk about that next week. Go ahead, Jeff.
You guys both teach. Do you have any classes coming up? Are you got anything you want to promote or... You got shows, the Silver Scream Spook Show.
That's not happening until March 14th.
Not going on until...
Yeah, I'm kind of taking the winter off.
Yeah, same here. Usually this time of year, after Halloween, it pretty much dies for us until after first of the year. And convention like that, I really don't do any conventions anymore. I very rarely do them. It's just...
You enjoy your life.
Yeah, I do. I mean, between season 3 and season 5, and right after season 5, I was doing conventions. I did 16 conventions in 1 year.
Yeah.
And
did
so
you
it
do
was
Walker
like,
Stalker? I think I might have seen a couple Walker Stalkers.
And the thing is, I mean, I would be like, on the West Coast one weekend, East Coast went the next weekend, Midwest, and East Coast, West Coast. I got to where I didn't know where I was or what time it was.
Yeah.
And so I did that for about 3 months, and it's like, I got to slow down, and they finally just got first of all, they stopped calling, which was a good thing, and so I was able to actually go and actually work and do what I want to do. So it's just been busy. So conventions really aren't high on my list at the moment.
And that Netherworld probably keeps you busy quite a bit of the year, doesn't it?
We stay busy all year long. I mean, we're already starting getting ready for next year.
Right.
So I have to ask a question. What inspired? Oh, you got to answer. Sorry. Go ahead. Shane, you want to answer Jeff's question, right?
Oh, about what's happening right now. Like this whole thing with the moving into this new house and setting up my old house as a rental is going to kill me. But
Airbnb?
That's what Madeline wanted to do. She was like, let's do haunted Airbnb. And I was just like, no. Yeah, but I just don't
And make it a party
time.
House, too. That way then people can just rent it and throw a party there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then trash
there's garbage everywhere. It's part of the ambiance.
Yeah.
I just don't think I want to deal with all that.
Yeah.
But I've got a couple, couple things happening,
Are you working on horror movies quite a bit, or do you work on independent films? I follow you both on Instagram, so you guys do, I mean, I'm assuming you do a lot of movies and stuff, or she acts in movies.
Yeah.
Horror movies.
I mean, she's doing more like improv comedy stuff right now. But we've got like, there's a lot of stuff I've got coming up that I'm not allowed to talk about.
Yeah.
It's like really, and it's cool because it's I'm doing it with Chris, with Casper. You know, he's got a lot of stuff happening.
He has a super creative brain, that guy. I'm in awe of him when he's on our show.
Yeah, Chris is amazing. Yeah. And he's finally doing his first feature, and it's, like, huge. So, like, that's what I'm pretty much locked in working on right now. And something that he's doing, looking like he's doing four episodes of a TV show that's, like, if it happens, it'll be, like, the most legendary thing I've ever been involved
in. Wow.
Like, just hearing that we're possibly going to do it.
I think I know what that is.
Yeah, you might.
I think I do.
Yeah. So we're real excited about all this stuff that's going on. Like, if we can't do Pretty Face, we're going to at least make some other stuff together, you know?
And Henry, he just got probably paid big time, right, when they just locked up with Spotify for his podcast.
Yeah.
What, is exclusive to Spotify now? Uh-huh. Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
But, you know,
that'll
Henry,
never happen for us.
He loves the show. Like, you know, Henry's like one of my best bros, you know? Like I said, he just came down and shot a movie where he played like an evil version of me. Like, we do silly stuff. You know, I helped them with their wedding and just all this wacky stuff. But Henry wants to act, you know, like we want to see Henry playing Holmes's sidekick in, you know, the Devil in the White City. Like, I want to see Henry get a serious role where he plays a sociopath and he's not dancing.
Yeah.
You know, because Henry is, like, there was a scene in this thing that we just did, and he scared me. Like, and I've known him for a long time. We've done a lot of stuff, but he was so intense. I was just like, one day, man, he's not going to have to dance, and he's going to do something that's going to scare the hell out of people.
I want to do a show in the future about horror movies and stuff. So when you can talk about more things, love to have you guys back in.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you don't even have to talk about more things. I just want to talk about horror movies and what's going on locally. I love that genre, and I don't see enough of it.
Well, there's a lot. I've always said Atlanta's like the horror capital of the country. Like, there's always something going on. Like, the Buried Alive Film Festival that Lucas and Blake put on last weekend was amazing. I saw, like, I could sit here all night and tell you about the movies I saw this past weekend.
We got to start doing stuff like that, going to those movie things.
I was going to say, though, I think if somebody wrote a screenplay about Pee-wee Gaskins, Henry would be perfect for that role.
Who's Pee-wee Gaskins?
Yeah, I need to ask.
He's a supposedly prolific serial killer. Not sure if he did kill 115 people, but he has very illustrated methods of killing them that he... It's one of the few books where he gave all of the information to the person who wrote it.
Oh, yeah.
So that's what makes it so chilling when
you
read
sure
it, because it's in his
knows
words.
All about it, too.
Oh, they've done a last podcast.
A 5-hour podcast about it, yeah.
Oh, they made so much fun of him. I was crying because this book it really bothered me, some of the imagery.
Yeah.
But then you listen to Henry and those guys when they tear somebody apart. It's kind of fun because they take their power away.
Yeah.
And they make them like the pieces of crap that they truly
that's
are.
That's a huge part of what they do.
Yeah.
You know, like, a lot of people go, oh, those guys, you know, they're like, they're almost vilifying these guys, and I feel sorry for them. And that's totally not where they're coming from. Like, they are not fans of serial killers.
No.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because, like, I remember, like, the nihilistic 90s. You remember? Yeah. Everything was just so, like, rotten and pessimistic and nihilistic, and the whole serial killer craze thing went down there. And after a while, like, I can't, like, deal with that stuff really anymore. Like, I had a bunch of original art from John Wayne Gacy and stuff like that. I gave it all to Henry because I was like, I don't want this in my house.
You had John Wayne Gacy art?
Yeah.
Wow.
And a letter from him with a Little Mermaid stamp on it that he had sent a Christmas card. But, like, after I gave it to him, Natalie was like, you know, I don't think I want that in the house either.
It doesn't carry anything with it. It's just a letter.
Yeah, I don't believe in any of that stuff either, but there is just some kind of weird – you just get a weird feeling looking at the stuff. I just don't need that kind of bad energy.
I have
you know?
Bob Evans comment card filled out by Joey Ramone that I asked him to fill out one time, and – I didn't send it in, of course. And maybe I get that feeling off of it. He put his phone number on there, so every time I got drunk for the next 10 years, I would call that number. Until finally a lady went, he's very sick, stop calling. All right, I'm sorry.
Wow. Is that true?
Yeah, I was a manager in a town called Carlisle, Pennsylvania, right on the turnpike. So we would occasionally have bands stop in. And Joey Ramone, well, first Marky walked in. And my boss went, hey, look, it's Joey Ramone. And I turned around and went, no, that's Marky.
Yeah.
And then all of them came in, and they all sat down at the front because you could smoke at the bar.
Yeah.
You could smoke at the front of a Bob Evans. So they're sitting there. I'm in awe. None of the people know who they are, the kids that are working in the back. And Joey's like, well, I'm a vegetarian. Do you have anything I could get? And I said, well, we have vegetarian sausage. Oh, I'll try that. So he's so nice. And I was so like, I was like Chris Farley. And, you know, I said, you know, I met you at the World Trade Center during the CMG music convention. He goes, oh, I think I remember you. I'm like, oh, no, yeah. So at the end, he said, you should have more food for diabetics here. And I said, you know, you're right. Why don't you fill out a comment card and I'll send it in. That's a great idea. Oh, and he wrote down what he ate, and he put very tasty in quotation marks. Here's how stupid I am. I sold it on eBay.
Oh, man.
I sold it on eBay to a guy in Germany. And I felt so horrible. I didn't want to let it go. I told him that it got destroyed. And then I just paid him back and kept it. Good. Got the bad feedback.
Because that's too much of a good thing.
No, you're right. I was like, why am I selling this? It's $80. I'm going to go, buy a bag of weed with this? And then I'm going to be miserable?
Yeah.
So
I hung out with Johnny once. And the funny thing about Johnny is he was like us. He loved old, like, monster movies. Like, he was, like, super into it. Like, the prize of his, like, crazy collection of stuff was he had a complete Famous Monsters collection that was, like, pristine.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he was talking about Basil Gogos and stuff, and he was nerding out. I was like, wow.
That's cool.
Pretty cool. Never talked about music or anything. All we talked about was monsters, you know? It's cool.
What's your favorite King Kong? You're going to say the original?
Only the 33.
Only the 33. You don't like the Jeff Bridges one?
Actually, the Peter Jackson one was so bad that it makes the Bridges one almost likable. I remember being like so upset as a kid and going to see it.
Yeah, I went
like,
and saw
man,
it.
Man, it's like they missed it. You know,
the first hour, you don't see anything.
Yeah. It's just, you know, to me, King Kong isn't just like the greatest movie personally for me, but it's like one of the greatest fantasy films ever made because of the way it works. Like, there's nothing superfluous in the whole storytelling at all. Like, everything that happens for a reason, and it's to drive this story.
Mm-hmm.
And later on, like, directors like James Cameron would use that template for, like, Terminator. You know, as soon as the action takes off, it never stops. You know, there's nothing that happens in King Kong or in the first Terminator that isn't necessary to drive the story.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're watching something like Peter Jackson's King Kong and in the time it takes to get to the island, and there's all these, like I said, superfluous characters. Like, who is this guy with this kids? He's making him read a book, and what's going on? Why is the cook got a Sumatran rat monkey in the bottom of the ship? Like, what's going on here? The original King Kong's already done.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
So, and then they turn into Romeo and Juliet, and King Kong gets to take an ice skating date in Central Park. Like, all the pathos is removed from the character if he finds love. Like,
right.
King Kong has to be the ultimate outsider and can never get a break, or your heartstrings aren't going to be pulled. Like, I don't know. I'm sorry.
That makes it.
But what do you think of Skull Island, though?
I thought that was a Vietnam movie with a monkey in it.
Skull Island was amazing.
Visual, like you liked the movie?
I did.
Yeah,
I gotta maybe watch it again.
Well, I liked it because then they introduced the whole thing when you're combining him and Godzilla and everything. Yeah, at the end of it, you know, you sort of see where all this stuff is coming from. Some of the CGI work and all I didn't care for, but as far as the overall concept, I liked the overall concept of it.
Now, there's going to be a Godzilla versus King Kong movie, right?
I don't know. After that last Godzilla movie.
Oh, that's all bad.
All of them
have
sucked. All of them, except for the originals, have sucked.
Well, have you seen Shin Godzilla?
No, what's Shin Godzilla?
It's the movie that, like, won the Oscar in Japan for Best Picture, and it was, like, a reboot of Godzilla. Like, Kyle and I went to Japan to go see the premiere.
Really?
Like, a bunch of us got together and went, because we were so excited that Japan was going to make this Godzilla movie. And it is insane.
What's it called again?
It's called Shin Godzilla, which means new.
Okay.
And, yeah, it's... if the I kind of feel like the Japanese are the only ones allowed to make Godzilla movies.
Yeah.
They should be anyway.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. There's something inherently Japanese about it. Like, you can't – the thing that really bothered me about King of the Monsters was they turned nuclear energy into a good thing,
yeah,
in a Godzilla movie, which are always like these like warnings, like, no, mm-hmm, we got it, you know.
Yeah. Well, the whole movie's about warning.
Yeah.
That Godzilla.
And this one wasn't. It was like, no, nuclear energy is great. It's making plants grow, you know. Like,
but do you think some of like the old classics – the you just can't recapture that. Like, the Creature of the Black Lagoon was so terrifying to me as a child. Could you recapture that?
Shape of Water.
No.
It's never going to be as good as, right, Creature from the Black Lagoon, but Shape of Water did a good thing with the story of the Creature from the Black Lagoon. They just turned it around a bit.
I never really thought about it like that. Like, it was Creature. Like,
it was. I didn't even think about that. Del Toro's, like, when Universal pitched all this new universe of universal creatures, that, right, was his script.
Wow,
I didn't know that.
Yep, too bad they had to do The Mummy, because that was just horrible. I couldn't even watch more than 20 minutes of it, and that was just painstaking, yeah, trying to watch
the
that
first
much of it.
10 minutes of it, though, were kind of fun with the zombies in the sunken graveyard.
Yeah,
like,
but I mean,
but that was just a visual thing. That's not, you know, as you know, like, the best special effects in the world are no good if there's not a good movie behind.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yes.
So even if there's a neat moment, you know, it's like, nah, you're not getting.
Might as well just watch a demo reel.
Yeah,
you know, if you're gonna do that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I will say too, the Creature of the Black Lagoon, like, it didn't start out with some lady diddling herself in the bathtub, which kind of really just...
It would have been,
yeah,
better.
It just kind of,
yeah,
took me out of the...
I could have used that, actually.
They showed
Julie
that.
Julie Adams diddling, yeah, herself in the bathtub, bring it on.
They showed that on WPIX out of New York City in the early 80s, and you had to go to the store and buy the newspaper to get 3D glasses. Then you had to fuck with the TV.
Yeah, they get the contrast.
Yeah,
right.
And then you sit there and just, that was the first time I'd ever seen 3D TV.
Yeah.
And that was the same time that...
Is that the one that they did the Raymond Burr movie?
God,
it was an old black and white movie, had a gorilla in a cage, and you had like...
Gorilla at Large.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
And the other one... There was a third one called The Mask.
I remember. Put the mask on now.
Yeah. Yeah. That movie really holds up.
Put the mask on now.
Yeah. That's a good one.
And then Parasite was the movie that was playing in the theaters. They've always tried.
Demi Moore's first.
I didn't know she was in that.
Yeah.
They kept trying to reboot the 3D genre. It didn't really happen until, you know, the last 10, 15 years.
I remember seeing Friday the 13th in 3D, and that was pretty good.
That was pretty badass.
Yeah.
For that time, I love all those movies. Do you guys
like the 3D back then better than the 3D now?
You do?
Yeah.
Because it comes out at
you.
Yeah.
The 3D now just
everything's
seems
like
depth,
just
floats depth of field. Just, yeah.
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 I get seasick. I don't like to watch movies in 3D. I'd like to see them on like a...
I liked Avatar
screen,
in 3D.
But I don't care for the 3D. Yeah. I just want to see the way it is.
I didn't really like the movie all that much, at least the script, but it was visually beautiful.
Yeah, but visually, it was neat.
I wish they would take... I was going to ask you, is there a movie that you guys can think of or from back in the day that would make a good show now? Like, I would love to see Phantasm. I wish they would turn that into a television
show.
I think that would be ripe for a weekly thing.
Did you see the last movie that came out?
Yeah.
You did? Okay, I don't remember. It was so long ago, 2 years ago. We talked about it.
Phantasm.
Yeah.
I like the first two.
Yeah.
And that's like, I don't feel like they ever got any better than that.
I like the sex scene in the cemetery in the first one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember being 10
right
or 11 going,
yeah,
I like that lady.
This is a great movie.
Yes.
I don't know. Really, I mean, as far as like movies to make shows like that, I don't. But I mean, I've recently just gotten into, on Prime, they've got Night Gallery.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and all those old, the old monster show from the 80s. You know, and I've just been sucked into those, watching those again.
Did you see Creepshow? The new Creepshow?
I think they've done a great job.
They did a good job.
Yeah,
they did a really good job.
Did they?
Yeah.
You'll
love it.
We went nuts for Blood Drive a couple years ago. Did you guys watch that show?
Yeah, with the cars that drink
blood.
That
ran on blood. Yeah. It was fun. It was just dumb and fun, and then it just never went anywhere.
It knew what it was doing.
Yes.
Sure.
Yeah.
I would say that would be a horror makeup, especially if you do horror makeup and stuff. That was like every week is Christmas to do that show.
Yeah.
You're spot on, though. Phantasm would make a great show.
I would love
Funeral
to
Home, Small Town.
Yeah.
Not a reboot, though.
No.
Continuation.
Yeah, basically, yeah.
What do you think? Is there
anything? I think like all the movies I've seen. You know, really, I wish that they wouldn't take something that's known. I would rather take something that's an unknown property, something that they should do reboots of flops instead of hits.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the problem. You know, take a movie that was just a total disaster and try to make it better.
Sorority Babes at the Slimeball Bowl-a-Rama.
That's a great
and
one.
And make it good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that a Linnea Quigley?
I don't remember who's in it. I just know I've seen it.
So there is one that I'm super excited about, and this is something that I've been talking about forever. And Henry Zebrowski and I have this dream project that's kind of a ripoff of it. I don't know if you guys know about Elric, the Elric Saga. It's a sword and sorcery book. Michael Moorcock wrote it. He's crazy. Like, okay, Robert E. Howard's Conan is the best, right? Mm-hmm. Nothing's going to top it. But the Elric series was so, like, super psychedelic and punk rock crazy, and they're talking about finally turning it into a series. And they've got, like, the Game of Thrones people and the Walking Dead people, writers or something, are involved. I saw it was announced. And that would be the one for me because that – and I think they need somebody that's out of – like, it can't be like Game of Thrones.
Right.
It's really cerebral stuff. He goes to his other reincarnated abilities and the – all this crazy stuff happens. You know, it's about a drug addict that has to go to hell to get a sword that drinks souls so he doesn't have to take drugs anymore. and the sword, like, gets possessed and goes crazy and sometimes kills his best friends. And all it's so crazy. And I just hope that they do it right, you know, and it doesn't become like a Game of Thrones thing where it's just like a soap opera.
Huh? I said I got a lot of homework to do.
Yeah.
I'm excited.
Elric is great stuff. And if you don't like to read, you could just get the comic book version that P. Craig Russell did. That's fantastic adaptation.
So I like comic books, audiobooks, and then reading.
Yeah. We'll get the P. Craig Russell adaptations that Eclipse did in the 80s of Elric of Melnibone, and they're fantastic.
Will do.
Yeah.
You guys have anything else you'd like to ask before we wrap up? Jeff, you look puzzled.
There was one question I was going to – oh, people on Reddit wanted to see if you could do like a quick rundown of how the Your Pretty Face makeup has evolved. And I know we talked about it when we went to the set. You said you could do like a full demon or maybe even Satan himself makeup in like an hour now.
Yeah, it's like 40 minutes. Things got faster when we started using like encapsulated silicone appliances to lock the horns in and stuff, you know. Like Roy was saying, like the technology keeps changing and actually the prep time's a little longer on these things, but it makes the application move faster. So, you know, there's always a sneakier way to get these background guys knocked out too.
And are you flattered or do you get pissed off when you see people like cosplaying as some of your characters?
Oh no, it's amazing.
Do you like that?
That's so wonderful. Like that was one of the first things, like, because we didn't know what was going to happen with the show. It's just like that thing with Too Many Cooks. Nobody really believed in Too Many Cooks, and when I saw the edit I was like, whoa, get ready, you know. And they're like, it's getting dumped at 4 a.m no one's going to see this, nobody cares. And the next day I texted Casper about noon. I said, have you seen what's going on? And he calls me back, oh, wow. You know, and they're bringing him his coffee on a velvet pillow for the rest of the week. But, you know, you just never know, you know, what's going to hit. And when I was at some convention, it might have even been Dragon Con, I saw somebody in the lobby and I just sent those guys a picture. I said, look, it's beginning. Like, people, if they're starting to dress up as you and get tattoos of you and stuff, then you know you've done something that's going to stick, you know.
Yep.
So it's exciting. I was never would be offended by somebody that appreciates what we do.
Yeah, people are into it, and people. This last Halloween, there was a lot of talk about how to do the makeup and what techniques to use, and a lot of banter back and forth about processes that they use. So I'm sure people would be into hearing a little bit more about what. You know, how the process has evolved.
How do you get that glorious shade of orange?
Yeah. It's a lot of expensive makeup, that's for sure.
Is that what it is? And the airbrushing?
Yeah, well, we use this. It's the same red base that apparently they used on Hellboy. So when we started to do the makeups, they were like, wait, what is going on in Atlanta? Why is, because the company, like when we get ready to do that show, we have to call them and say, hey, we need, because it's a color nobody uses. It's this Cajun red. And it looks like it's got fluorescent color in it. It looks like it has a, but it doesn't. It just has that glow to it. And so, like, Chris loves it. Chris comes in and he'll go, Chris Brown, the one of the top guys I work with, he's, comes in and he's like, that's what $15,000 of Illustrator looks like.
Wow.
Everybody goes, oh.
Yeah. And the thing is, too, is that whenever they're shooting, you can't get red in town at any makeup store.
Really?
Yeah, because even people who come in and like help out with backgrounds, they have to have it in their kit, and so they'll usually just buy everything.
That's awesome.
Yeah. We had to call the company and get them hey, we're getting ready to get in production, you know?
Well, I hope you guys get some news soon and can start rolling, maybe in 2020.
Yeah, that would be great.
Roy, where can people find you on social media if they'd like to interact with you?
On Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, it's all Roy Woolley FX.
Roy Woolley FX. You want to go to Matthew's one day?
Sure, yeah. Yeah, just let me know when.
My treat.
Okay, I'll tell you. You treat the first time, I'll treat the second.
And not on Fried Liver Day.
No.
No.
No,
fried, I want to go.
No fried liver.
Yeah, I want to go because I want to ask you like all kinds of crap about season 3 and season 5.
Anytime.
Just, we'd love to have you back on the show, by the way, anytime.
It was bull crap that they let Nicole come back. She rested up and she, anyway.
Bull crap.
Shane, where can people find you on social media?
Oh, man, I'm the worst.
Or anything you'd like to promote.
Yeah, it's you know, Silver Scream Effects Lab, you know, .com or the Instas. You know, Silver Scream Effects, Professor Morte.
Prof Morte
on
Twitter.
Yeah.
Last question. Why the Cheddar Goblin? Where did that come from?
That was something that Panos hit us up. He was like a fan of Too Many Cooks.
Mm-hmm.
And he called Casper and was like, hey, we don't have much money, but we'd really love it if you guys did this crazy commercial. And it was crazy because we were shooting Pretty Face at the time, and Chris comes in, and the workload's big, and you know you've worked down there. There's not a lot of money. And he was like, so what do you think about shooting this thing for this movie Mandy this weekend with this puking goblin puppet that you're going to have to make? And I was
you got
to
see it if you haven't.
Yeah. Mandy?
No, the movie. Yeah, I want to see the movie, but this is hilarious.
The movie. But the thing about Cheddar Goblins, I didn't know what it meant to the movie. We just knew we were doing a favor to this guy who I think is a visionary director who I'm a big fan of, Beyond the Black Rainbow. So literally, I sculpted that thing in 5 hours. Kyle put it into a mold on set. We pulled two of them. I was airbrushing it on the way to the location the Saturday, the one day I had off, and we shot it in like 5 hours. I had forgotten about the thing, and Chris calls me from Sundance, and he's like, you're not going to believe this movie we worked on. It's the greatest thing we've ever done. You're not going to believe it. I'm like, what movie? Where are you? And he's like, Leonard Maltin is interviewing your puppet right now. There's a bidding war over our movie. And I was like, our movie? Wait, what? What?
Wow, that's awesome.
And then, you know, it just kept going crazy. It's just like what we said. You never know what's going to hit. Like, and I'll never forget this. Kevin and Kyle were like, why are we doing this? Because we're on set. We'd set 15, 25 makeups. And then they start cleaning out the mold, and they're like, why are we doing this? And I was like, watch, it'll be it seems silly, but it might be the biggest thing we do all year.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, it's that movie is, like, going down in the legend, you know?
We got to watch. We'll have a watch party, just the three of us.
Amanda?
Yes.
Yeah. I just watched it recently.
Oh, you saw it already.
Oh, yeah.
All right, then we'll watch the house that Jack built.
I have to stop doing drugs, like hard drugs.
It's yeah.
Been a while. But every once in a while, a movie will come along, and I'll say, God. Wish I still
acid for a 2-hour movie, that's a bad idea. First time I did that, I'm like, I'm gonna watch Yellow Submarine.
Yeah.
First 10 minutes, I'm like, that's not the Beatles voices, and now I'm tripping and I go,
it's like this friend of mine that took acid to go see Event Horizon.
Oh no.
What have you done?
They are making a show out of that.
Oh yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh my god.
Yeah. That would actually, hope if they do it right.
Hey, The Simpsons is on. I think I'm going to take acid.
Guys, thank you very much for coming
in. Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, it was very nice meeting both of you.
Yeah, and if you got something coming up you want to plug or anything, just let us know and we'll be glad to.
Yeah, anything you got coming up to promote, definitely.
Yeah, great. Well, we'll have to have Professor Morte come out here the 1st of March so I can pump this spook.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, guys, so make sure you follow Roy Woolley and Shane Morton on Twitter. Everything's posted in the show information. And before we wrap, we do real quick, we'll do our staff picks, but super fast. Yeah, you don't have one today? Why are you shaking your head?
I really don't have one.
Yeah, you do. Oh, you don't have one? All right, well, here's mine. Dan Carlin, The End Is Always Near, Apocalyptic Moments from the Bronze Age, Collapse to Nuclear Near Misses. He's the guy that does the Hardcore History podcast, if you or have any interest at all in the Mongols. It's fantastic. This guy is an amazing guy. And you can get the book at Amazon and Kindle or at Audible Audiobooks, which I believe they own all three.
And mine is Mike Birbiglia. His Netflix special comes out on the 26th. It's called The New One. Looking forward to that.
You guys have a staff pick?
Hey, there's something you want to recommend that you're into?
They kind of just did, but go ahead.
Yeah, I'm going to say My Best Friend's Exorcism. I started it this morning, like having my morning cup of coffee, and Madeline's like, what are you doing? It's, you know, it was like 120 pages. It's like amazing.
Okay.
This book.
I'm going to have really to listen good. To the show and like take notes. These are going to be extensive notes.
Yeah.
Because I need more stuff to do.
Yeah.
Podcast, Battles with Bits of Rubber.
Battles of Bits.
It's with the guy from England, Stuart Bray and Tom DeBersini. They have to talk about makeup artists, makeup procedures, all kinds of great stuff.
You'll be checking that out.
Oh, yeah.
Hell yeah.
Absolutely. Oh, okay, so I do have one little pick. I don't know if it's really good yet or not, but I'm watching Kill Chain.
What's Kill Chain?
It's a Nicolas Cage movie.
Whoa.
On Amazon Prime.
You're really into Nick Cage.
I love him. I do.
He's back.
I do like him.
I love him. Even his worst stuff. Anything that he does.
The current meme of like, you know, it's like, you know, Nicolas Cage playing Nicolas Cage as Nicolas Cage.
Yeah.
That's real. That's a real thing.
But did that really start with the first deepfakes were all Nicolas Cage?
Yeah.
Even before the porn.
Yeah.
I mean,
what is it?
He's just he's a versatile dude. I mean.
Yeah.
And I don't understand. I feel like one of you guys have done his makeup for this movie because he looks like he's 40 years old. I don't know how. It's like he doesn't age.
Yeah, I don't know. It could be a, like, you know, CGI makeup.
That's very possible.
Hey, if you're listening to this show in Atlanta and you've been in Atlanta for a long time, I just want to throw this out there real quick. I want to say it's some sad news last week in the radio world. Bob Bailey, who was a disc jockey for 96 Rock and Z93 for a long, long, long time, passed away from cancer. He was 66 years old. He's just in the 80s and 90s. If you drove home from your job and you were stuck in the road and you listened to him on the radio, you heard traffic jam and jokes. He was such a nice guy. He was so welcoming to me when I first moved to Atlanta. My first job was with Z93, you know, hanging banners and driving those shitty vans around. And I thought, you know, it was 96, but I still looked at DJs as superstars, you know, and like celebrities and stuff. And he would just talk to you like you were a normal person. Other people could be snobby or whatever, you know, oh, you're the new guy, you're the banner hanger. Not him. He was just one of the nicest people ever. And there's a nice write-up in the AJC from Rodney Ho. You can check that out. Do you remember him on the radio?
Oh, yeah.
Just a legend in the city. And you don't really have that except for, you know, our show.
Yeah,
with Eric Von Hassler. Maybe Southside Steve, but he's kind of trapped. But I do like being a part of that industry still. And, you know, and rest in peace, Bob. And it was certainly nice knowing you. Coming up in the next couple of weeks, we're going to be speaking with Joe Para from Joe Para Talks to You with You, starting on Adult Swim on December 6th. And I would like to promote the Sketchworks Holiday Special Part 2, A Very George Lucas Sketchmas. The majority of sketches are Star Wars themed. At the Village Theater, December 6th and 7th, 13th and 14th at 8 p.m. For tickets and more information, go to sketchworkscomedy.com. Again, guys, thank you very much. You guys, and good luck with everything, and keep kicking ass.
Yeah. Awesome.
Keep it canon.
Yeah, keep it canon.
Keep it canon. We say keep it canon.
By the way, Boomer got adopted.
Yay, Boomer.
Yeah.
Oh, we didn't do your dog stuff. Do you have something to promote?
I don't have anything this week, no.
There's nothing going on with the dogs?
Well, we're doing the concession stand, the Georgia Tech game.
Oh, that's this weekend?
It's the next weekend.
Oh,
and you've already told me to go to hell.
I didn't tell you to go to hell, but I'm not standing there with a bunch of mouth breathers. And I'm not talking about the staff.
But that's it, yeah.
Hey, will
you, oh, yeah. It's,
give me some peanuts.
Well, it's adopt a senior pet for free this month at Gwinnett County. So, and I think DeKalb, and I think Rockdale, and I think Fulton. So if you want an old dog or an old cat, now's the time to go. You can get one for free and bust them out of jail.
Thank you, Steph.
Hey, radios. Thank you for listening to Radio Labyrinth. We want to thank everyone who's donating over on patreon.com/Tim Andrews. If you are not a patron, go check us out. We have different tiers available for whatever price point you're interested in. If you have any ideas for some benefits that you'd like to see coming up, let us know. We're open to all kinds of feedback and to ideas and to brainstorming. But first, I want to thank Aaron Roberts, Al McMeekin, Alan Barker, Amber Gilpatrick, Andrew Harbin, Andrew Hopkins, Andrew Mulatsi, Beth Van Elswick, Bradley Schumpert, Brennan Price, Brian Jackson, Brian Smith, Buck Monterrey, Chad Shepard, Chris Cosentino, Chris Knight, Chris Weiland, Christopher Doerr, Colin Oman, Daniel Pitts, Dave Benson, David C. Funk, Dean Poole, Denise Reynolds, Dustin Lalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalal Jason Hoft. Jason, I hope that's cool. Jeff Peterson, Jeremy Turman, Jesse Rosinski, John Sutherland, Jonathan Wilson, Keith Tate, Kevin Schwartz, Kevin Stokes, Kit Beatty, Lauren Kaldeman, Leslie Haney, Leslie Norman, Luca Miguel, Mark Weiland, Marty Johnson, Matt Carter, Melissa Knowles, Michael Einhaus, Mike D, Mike Hall, Mike Spittler, Nicholas Frank, Nick Starts, Robert Calderman, Robert Haley, Ruben Aguilar, Rusty Weinberg, Ryan Wilson, Sam Wells, Sean Hall, Sherry Doherty, Steve Knutson, Trent, Walt, Murray, Wayne, Blair, and Swenzy Muller. Thank you, honey. We love you. Bye-bye. Keep it canon or whatever you say. These kids. Aw. Oh.